Yearning to play a few rounds of Gwent. That ought to set me straight.
Welcome to Commander's Horn, episode 13. We're kicking off our five-part series on the essential plays of Gwent. Today we're talking about power, which sends us to the Northern Realms to explore first-turn blockbusters and game closers. We also have some community and tournament news to cover, so stick around. All this and an unstoppable horse on this episode of Commander's Horn. Welcome back to you, and you, and you, and you, to Commander's Horn, your only weekly audio Gwent podcast. I am one of your hosts, Dane McBeard, and I am joined, as always, by Josh, no nickname required, Grey Boxer. How are you today, my friend? How are you?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for asking. I wanted to add that we are the only weekly iTunes-available Gwent podcast in the world.
So thank you so much to our worldwide audience. We really appreciate that we can reach so many people about this little game that we like so much across the planet. It's very cool. So today we are starting a five-part series about the five different plays in Gwent, the way we see it, the way we see it breaking down.
Yeah, and in general, card games do have sort of a breakdown of the kind of plays that you can have based on the cards and the decks and everything. So we're going to break it down to you Gwent style.
Gwent style, exactly. I mean, you're probably familiar with terms like aggro or control, or in some cases, face, in card games that involve a face to hit and all the power that would go directly to that face and the smork emote in Twitch and all of that stuff.
So you're saying not like face rolling on the keyboard? That's
well,
not a
I
play?
Mean, some of those decks may actually require some face rolling. to make happen. They're not the most popular decks, but at the same time, they are some of the most popular decks. So,
Isengrim face roll. Isengrim
face roll. Yeah. All you have to do is play Isengrim last. That's all you have to do. Oh, you know, we can share some stories about that, maybe just before we get started. So, Josh, I watched your stream on Monday night, and you were in full Dwarven garb, and you were having some problems with Scoia'tael decks coming to get you.
Yeah, well, as you know, I am, I do a specific theme on Monday nights. I do my late night, early morning streams, and this week's Mahaka Monday, which is what we call it. We do full-on sweaty dwarven beard ale horn metal on Monday nights. And I built a 25-card deck using every single dwarf in the game. And you could imagine that this is not an optimal build for Gwent. So when we would face mirror matches of the strong Scoia'tael decks and everything, my little dwarves would be out there plucky as hell, but they couldn't get the job done until we made a couple changes. We ended up eking out some wins with this deck, which was incredibly fun. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's a Dwarven Renaissance coming, but yeah, we couldn't handle the Scoia'tael. Oh my gosh.
Scoia'tael. The dwarves. They are hardworking, industrious people. So
thank you.
The very next day, thank you. The very next day, I took to my stream just to try some decks. I wanted to try Gels. I wanted to try King Bran again. And I would say that I probably ran into like six or seven back-to-back Scoia'tael matches. And each one of those matches, I got dominated. And I felt your pain. I don't know what it was, but it was just... Every opponent was doing the same thing, so it was very demoralizing. And I think I hate elves.
You hate elves?
I think I don't like elves anymore.
Remember how I felt about Dolblathana archers for the longest time, and just apply that to every elf in the game now. Mm-hmm. Even some dryads.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't want to say anything too controversial, but blue stripes. Blue stripes forever. Gonna get my tattoo tomorrow, blue stripes.
That's right.
Get those blue stripes, which is good because we're going to be talking about Northern Realms today. So, like I said, five plays in Gwent. So the first chapter of that is power plays. And we feel that Northern Realms covers power plays probably the best. We think that each style of play can be attributed to a specific faction. So there'll be a lot of Northern Realms talk today, but we will be covering power plays of other factions as well. So you can look forward to that in our strategy section. But before all that, I would just like to let you know that Commander's Horn records on Wednesdays and posts weekly on Thursdays. You can find Commander's Horn on iTunes, Stitcher, and other podcasting apps. We've applied for Acast as well, so we hope to have good news for you soon on that one. Have a platform you'd like to find us on? Let us know, and we'll look into it. Send all emails to commandershornpodcast@gmail.com or tweet @commandershorn. We love reading about hilarious Gwent moments, suggestions for the show, guests you'd like us to reach out to, or you can just send a friendly hello. We'd like to read it all.
Yeah, and we actually heard about Acast from a listener who had basically asked us to see if we could get hosted on Acast because they'd like it available there. So that's actually exactly why we're following up with Acast right now.
And to others who are finding us through GwentDB, welcome. We are thrilled to be featured there. And all of the decks we discuss on the podcast can be found at GwentDB. We'll be putting all of those in the show notes. And it's just a pleasure. It's a pleasure to be featured on such an important site to our community.
Oh yeah, I mean one of the best sites, one of the main sites that we go to for our Gwent card resources. I go there all the time just to grab the high resolution card art for anything personally I want to do on my stream or on my channel. So definitely big ups to Molster there for making us a part of that party.
Absolutely. So find a deck, build a deck. Look at what the top decks are, and then keep up on Gwent news. Something else we are also very happy to be a part of. We are frequent users of a website called Zencaster.
Oh, yeah.
That's Zencaster without an E at the end there, cast R. So Zencaster is a really great audio program that we use. It allows us to record very high quality through a browser, and we've been using it for a while. They just launched their new platform. This is not an ad. This is us saying that this product is very good, and we wouldn't have the podcast that we have without this site. It would be just a little different, and we think the quality is awesome because it's basically giving me Graybox's audio directly from his computer. It's quite good.
So because we record with Zencaster, my pretty decent headset sounds like a professional microphone as long as I'm not breathing heavily into it. So,
like I said, not an ad. We just like it. Last thing we want to talk about before we get into the news, we have more beta keys to give away. And this time, we are not going to be doing it through Twitter. We will be selecting iTunes reviews. So please leave us an iTunes review and then tweet at us and tell us which country you added it in, because we have to look at the country-specific store to see it. So this will really help us. We will be drawing the names on Monday at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we'll be contacting the winners shortly after that. While we would hope you would have nothing but positive feedback, even if you wanted to say something like, I gave this 5 stars even though this show was hosted by 2 filthy Dwan, that's fine too.
You shall die, worm!
Yeah, all that stuff. It's fine. If you want to put that stuff, that's fine. It's really, it's difficult to get people to write reviews on iTunes. They don't make it easy. It's not an easy process. So, if you would like to take the time to do it, we will make sure it is worth your while, and we will be giving away beta keys. We'll be drawing from everybody who leaves us an iTunes review. Once again, from the moment you hear this to Monday at 11:59 p.m., you are entered to win with your iTunes review.
iTunes can take a day or occasionally 2 days to post an iTunes review. It doesn't post instantly, so this giveaway is going a little bit longer than usual, so we will alert you on the show next week, because hopefully by the time we record next Wednesday, we will have all the iTunes reviews that were posted by the deadline on Monday. That's 11:59 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We'll be rewarding our top commandos with beta keys.
That's what we're calling them, eh? Commandos.
We'll call them
commandos.
Just come up with that.
You are the commandos.
The followers of the show are commandos. Is that it?
I like it. The commandos.
Oh, man. All right, commandos, assemble.
To rally the commandos. It makes so much sense.
We have a lot of these keys to give away, okay? We were gifted a number of them, and we are very grateful, and we are going to give it back. We're going to pay it forward. We're going to give away these beta keys to our top commandos, and they're all for PC, by the way.
All for PC. Important note. But with that out of the way, Greyboxer, how has your week been going in the world of Gwent? What have you been up to?
Oh, well, besides the Mahaka Mondays madness, Just doing some streaming. Actually, I've been doing a lot of streaming. And actually, if you didn't know, I'm sure you know, it's Thanksgiving time in the United States. So we are preparing to host Thanksgiving. We've got family in town. We've been prepping irresponsible amounts of food. We're preparing to host on Thursday, so my Gwent Studios were invaded by the best types of invaders. Family guests. So I've been streaming a lot, as I mentioned, and I actually streamed last night on my laptop using the terrible webcam that comes with my laptop, and actually we had a good stream.
You made it work.
We got the music working, like the audio levels were kind of borked for a minute, but after a while it worked out just fine, so actually you can expect a couple more streams this weekend.
But you can have them anywhere you want. If you can do it on the laptop, you can do live streams from, I don't know, you go to a coffee shop. And they can watch you bang on the table and knock your espresso over and yell about Radovid. And
can you imagine what I'd be on if I had an entire ale horn filled with espresso?
Oh, yeah.
By my beard.
That's my favorite one, I think.
Let me just ask, like, you've been hard at work at coming up with new strategies after this new patch.
I don't know if I would say that they are new strategies, but I would say that I tried my hand at guide writing. So like we said, we're going to be discussing some decks that we built on GwentDB, and we'll be linking them in the show notes. I built a deck, and I wrote a pretty in-depth guide, and I enjoy doing so, and I would like to do it more in the future. So right now, mainly is on stream, we're building decks we think work, and we're playing them, and if they work, I'll be writing about them the next day, and I'll be able to like approach it from all the different points of view that I would have had the previous day. So the only one that I have like in a completed, very presentable state is the Radovid deck that we will be talking about in the strategy section.
So you're saying you haven't done a write-up for the Gels deck yet?
Well, I could do a write-up on it. It would say something like, this deck you will lose a lot, and I hope it builds character for you.
Oh, it's the character build, deck build, build.
The strategy is try your hardest and fail. I don't know. Maybe that was just my experience with Kels and then later King Bran. It was a rough one yesterday, but we're going to turn it around today. It's okay. It's okay. Let's get into some news. Again, we like to follow what's going on in the Gwent sphere, and there's a couple of things right after this break. All right, folks, so some Gwent news. We can start with some tournament news because this seems to be the theme. Every weekend, tournament or two occurs.
Yeah.
This week was Beta Brawl number 3, which was actually the fourth Beta Brawl. And numbers are confusing, but there was a Beta Brawl 1.5, which was kind of a smaller format.
Yeah.
This one occurred last Saturday. It was a quick tournament. I think it only took all of 3 hours for everything to complete. Best of three, last deck standing, and no bans.
What did you think about that format? Just to jump in here real quick, the last deck standing, no bans. Because you were the champion when you could ban.
Well, yeah, so I was, but that wasn't last deck standing. So in the first Beta Brawl was called a conquest format, where you need to win with all of your decks before you can advance. Whereas a last deck standing is you need to lose with all of your decks before you are out. The issue is, if you have a deck that's very, very strong, it can carry you through most of the tournament. And in a format with no bans, those decks are running, they can run wild. So I think the bans should be more for the last deck standing formats rather than the conquest. I don't think conquest needs bans. But that being said, I would like to congratulate our champion of the Beta Brawl 3, Mortan, who is also the winner of Beta Brawl 1.5. He defeated Dunkoro in the finals. We got a chance to watch it, and he piloted Scoia'tael. Not bad, not bad, Mortan.
Scoia'tael's very strong deck. Excellent deck building by Mortan, and of course, excellent play to be the champion of Beta Brawl number 3, the fourth Beta Brawl. But I know what everyone's thinking. How did McBeard, a.k.a. McChamp, a.k.a. The Champ, doing this tournament? Sorry to let you down, folks.
Yeah.
After this week's tournament, McBeard has fallen all the way down to second place on the leaderboard. What happened?
Second place is first loser. No, I'm just kidding. I'm super thrilled that I can even count myself among these great players. I mean, we all take it seriously. We all prepare. But in this particular tournament, I didn't do so well. I would say it was my worst showing. I think I was out in round three. The points I received in the previous tournaments, Beta Brawl 1, Beta Brawl 2, they keep me on the board, and I just am continuing to improve my gameplay.
There was a pre-announcement for the Passiflora tournament. The announcement has been announced to be announced on November 25th. So we'll find out a lot more details about the Passiflora tournament, which is going to be taking place at an undisclosed time. But we have Seraxia in here who's going to be running that tournament. He's been very busy, I think, with BlizzCon. And we should have news on that by Friday.
Yeah, it looks like Friday, November 25th. Seraxia has been promoting this tournament since before the beta launched. He has had it in his sights. And I assume that this is going to be a very well thought out and well organized tournament. No pressure, Seraxia.
But right.
It's just it's kind of always been in our peripheral vision. Like we know it's there. It has its own Discord and just kind of waiting, rubbing our hands together. Like, get in there.
What's it gonna be? You know.
What's it gonna be? But beyond that, we have some other news. These pieces of news are really various kind of confirmed changes we know are coming, kind of things that the developers are looking into. And we get this information from Discord. As you know, if you listen to this or follow Gwent closely on Reddit or Discord, developer Rethis is very vocal, even on his days off, to be able to answer questions about game design and balance to anybody who has a question. So we've gotten some information. We've got some information. I'll lead off with the first one here. We know that Nature's Gift, which is a Squirtle-only silver special card, which replays the last special that was played, it's not functioning correctly with Aromancy, because Aromancy spawns a very specific weather effect. Aromancy spawns rain, fog, or biting frost. So what's happening is Aromancy is spawning, for example, biting frost. When you play Nature's Gift, you aren't getting Aromancy to play. You're just getting Biting Frost to play. In addition to that, Aromancy is counting as two spells for any card that benefits from that, namely Isengrim. So the overall changes to this are yet to be seen. It's possible that Aromancy gets recoded to be a single spell, or Nature's Gift just can learn a little bit better.
Yeah, and I know what you're thinking. What are you talking about using Nature's Gift on something that's not Decoy?
I know it's weird, right?
People do play decks with 17 dwarves that run Nature's Gift and try to weather a row that they have no chance of winning if they don't weather it. And so I think that having the developer response that, okay, Nature's Gift is supposed to play the last special card, even though Aromancy does spawn a special quote-unquote card, being the weather effect, the intention is that Nature's Gift should be copying the actual card played, which is Aromancy. Mm-hmm. Because it's a dead card otherwise.
It's a technicality, I think. I think it's probably based off of, like, you would think if you play Aromancy, which is the card you're playing, and then you would play Nature's Gift, like, the intended function would be to get Aromancy back. And I think it's maybe looking at it from the POV of someone who was finding it out for the first time. Like, you can just see yourself sitting at a keyboard like, ah, oh, what? No. But I think it's... Even though there are moments like you play and you learn and you know it's not going to do that again, I think the elimination of those moments, kind of like you try to use a swallow potion on Golden Geralt for the first time because it says the potion's better on Witchers. It's like, I can't put it on Geralt. Oh, now I know. But to eliminate that whole like speed bump of learning is probably more beneficial because, you know, who knows? That could have cost you a game.
Yeah. You ask me how I know.
how do you know?
Because I replayed Aromancy after I had my units specifically set on a row where I could Aromancy, or rather my units were debuffed by an Aromancy, and then I was going to use Nature's Gift to give it right back to him on a different row, and then it just spawned Frost again, and I thought, how is that possible? And then, you know, to hear that that's, you know, not working as intended, because that's not what's expected by the player of Gwent here. So I think that's a really good change if they're looking into it. I think we're happy about that.
Yeah. And it seems like demoting and promoting is a hot topic right now as well. I think some people are thinking it's too strong, and there's some cards that make it very strong. Promoting in general has an aspect to it where if you buff something into like high green value numbers through Swallow Potion, Thunderbolt Potion, or anything else that adds strength to a unit, when you promote them, it locks in that strength as base strength.
Yeah.
So if you were to promote it and then demote it, now it's just like a 44 strength unit, and that's just how it is. So it's, I think a lot of people are looking at it. People think that this might be too strong. There's also the promotion of Roach, and we'll talk about that later in the strategy section. But promoting Roach, so he's gold, and every time he comes back, Northern Realms makes very good use of this. So when asked if there were new cards that could handle a promoted unit, the response that we received was that neutral cards will come that will address the promotion issue, and they're in development and to be planned to be released.
However, they also said that in a different post that they're not planning to add any neutral bronze units. So, like, while Northern Realms does have that specific bronze unit that can demote, Northern Realms is also the only faction that can promote. So there's a concern that the other factions don't have the ability to interact with all these promoted cards. So here's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking that they're going to, since we know it's not going to be a bronze card, but they're thinking of a neutral card. What if we're talking about a neutral silver card that demotes? What if it's Letho, the Kingslayer?
Well, he's knocked a lot of gold off in his time, crowns and such. So that wouldn't be surprising. I think that flavor-wise, you can do some fun stuff with Letho, him being an assassin of kings.
Yeah.
I think that my fun speculation is that he interacts with leaders in some way, but if Letho is a demoting card... Silver, though, man, Letho is so iconic. I kind of would want to see him as a gold card. It kind of bums me out that Olgierd is a silver card. I think it's just, like, optically how I'd like to see it. It has nothing to do with me wanting Olgierd to be a gold card and occupy a gold slot. It's just...
Yeah.
I just think there's some cards out there that... You know, the idea that, like, Vesemir isn't a gold card feels weird and stuff like that. But, you know, optically, it doesn't really make a difference. We're talking about balance. And we're talking about having our favorite characters in the game. So however that happens, thumbs up.
We're attaching like emotional value to the Gwent cards that we like the best. We want to see them be gold cards because we want to have them.
Yeah. We have charged opinions, you could say.
So an additional question was, what's happening to units when they move in and out of weather? And so I wanted to share a few notes I had on this. And one of them is that CD Projekt Red is working on solutions to moving in and out of weather. One such case that was asked in Discord was Odrin, in particular, who moves randomly along the row. He's a silver Northern Realms unit that just... drunkenly moves along the rows and buffs everybody because he's Odrin, and you know, I'd do the Odrin voice, but that would be kind of awkward and unprofessional this time. So Odrin, so he's moving in and out of weather, buffing and unbuffing himself into the weather. So instead of just saying that this is how weather works, Rethos said that they're actually working on a solution to units that move in and out of weather because future cards depend on this. And so, is this weather agile unit hype? Do units need more buffs?
I think Odrin can be fine if he had some sort of resilience to weather. I mean, he's drinking a lot, so he probably can't see very well in the first place, so fog shouldn't affect him. He's tanked, so the cold is probably not affecting him in the same way. And he's probably really sweaty already, so the rain isn't probably making him any more moist. So I can get behind that.
That is some high-end analysis right there, everybody. Now that is balance.
That's some Odrin analysis about his various states of being as he puts away those gigantic mugs of whatever that is. Premium art, please. I want to see those swinging around, splashing all over everything.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. If they can make it 3D enough where the beer splashes as he moves, man.
Oh, yeah.
That's going to be my spirit animal.
Odrin's the man. You see those forearms? He lifts those every day of his life. And you see that hairline? He's a lifetime party animal. I'm just saying. Underrated. Underrated personality.
So here's another one. This is one I don't understand. Why does Giant Toad which lands into weather. Let's say there's rain on the row. If you play your giant toad into weather, it devours a card from your hand. So it drops into the weather, goes from 5 to 1 power, and then it absorbs power from a unit in your hand, and then it gets buffed. So then it could be like a 10-strength unit, right? But what about Frightener? Frightener is only a 2-strength unit, okay? You play it into weather, and it drops down to 1, and then it eats everybody from the graveyard, and then it stays 1. So it's like the buff is applying before the weather with Frightener, but it's not applying before the weather with the giant toad. So I don't understand that, because there's no way to fix this problem with Frightener, who you simply can't play him into weather, because if you use clear skies on him, I mean clear weather, I remembered, that's right, not clear weather. So whenever you play clear weather, it only buffs the Frightener back up to 2 strength.
Yeah, it's Frightener's in a tough spot because he is very fraught. I think the problem with Frightener is that you really are telegraphing that you have Frightener. So if there's anything that can cause frost, your opponent's probably holding it. But I don't think you need to have like a 30 strength Frightener to have an effective deck. I think he's probably okay to run if you just need another power card, and you were okay like running him out at like 14 or 15. So I think it's just the full all-in on Frightener that makes it bad. But we're not really talking about that. I think we're talking about the weather interaction with these two cards.
Yeah.
So basically, it seems like Frightener's effect happens before it hits the board. So on its way down, it's eating all the stuff. This is how programming works, guys. This is how programming works. So it eats all the things before it goes down. But the toad lands in the weather and then eats the card. I think that's what's happening as well. And the Dwarven Skirmisher has a similar thing where it lands in the weather and then it surveys the board. So it's something to do with the removal of the cards in the graveyard and how that buff is applied before it hits the board. But it seems like it's applied before it hits the board.
Yeah,
like
I think
in transit.
Yeah, so I think there just needs to be consistency where if a card is going to buff itself based on a board state, based on units in graveyard, or based on a unit it eats out of your hand, I think we need to have consistency. Either it needs to play into the weather, have its original strength weathered, and then receive the buff, or it just goes all the way down when it gets played into weather, period. Of course, I don't really prefer the latter because I think it's kind of counterintuitive that weather just kills everything you want to play that might self-buff. So I feel like a change to Frightener to allow his buff to happen similar to the way the Toad's happens, which means that he's, you know, reduced to 1 and then buffed, that's not unbalanced because he's a great Scorch target at that point. He can be re-weathered, he can be Dimeridium bombed, there's a number of things you could do to remove that power. It's just so counterintuitive when one card in your deck works one way, and then the other one works entirely a different way.
I will refute your statement by saying there's no counterplay when it's your last card in your hand. What's that?
You got card advantage as monsters? Yeah, you deserve to win.
I'm just saying. No, but if you play Frost preemptively, then you're done, right? So it's just, I think everything you play into weather is 1. No matter what it does, it should be 1. Unless the buff occurs somehow after the play has completely resolved. And I think with Dwarven Skirmisher and with Giant Toad, that's not what's happening. So it just feels inconsistent, I think. But I think that it actually should be harsher. I think that everything should function like Frightener functions. But we know that they're looking at weather as a whole. So I think the way weather interacts with units is going to maybe ultimately be changing anyway.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
Additional news is we do know that there is a patch coming in December. It's also introducing new cards to the game. 20 new cards, according to our developer in Discord. 20 new cards are going to land in December. We don't have a date, but we've got the hype going already. Each faction has its own strengths and weaknesses, and in the current deck building meta right now, I think adding more cards to make more decks more viable is a good thing. And I think that, you know, adding 10 cards to Skellige to make them better isn't helpful. I think a split, like a very perfectly symmetrical split like you talk about would be great. And additionally, we would like to see this neutral unit that might affect promoting. And that might be how they address promoting in the patch as well. So stay tuned.
I actually think what they might want to do, and I don't know if they're going to do this at all, but the addition of new cards may not be evenly distributed. It may be cards that bring, because we know that Scoia'tael has less cards than any other faction, and that Monsters has more cards than any other faction. One of them has 44, and I forget if it's Monsters or not. So it could be evening that out, which means that some classes would get more cards than others, and then also neutral cards as well. And then, of course, I'm not sure if this would be coming in the December patch, but the reworking of the placeholder units, as we know, Drowner is one of those units.
One of your favorite units to rip on is the Drowner.
Well, I just like the idea of this gigantic roided out Drowner that's catapulting itself and his friends.
the dreaded Drowner siege, right?
It's the siege Drowner. No one saw it coming.
The Drowner siege of 1272, you know. Oh, Novigrad was under siege for months by millions of Drowners. Each were incredibly strong, and for some reason were throwing boulders.
How did they get so smart? Oh, what a terrible dark time that was.
Yeah.
Ever since they released the card, I think the first thing I remember the first two things I said about seeing all like the card art and all the cards when Gwent DB originally kind of broke that card list. Number one was WTF Drowner, and number two was who is that in Johnny's art? And then I was immediately told it was Ciri. So.
And then
no analysis from me outside of that, though. That's the only two things I said.
And your number three was, where the hell is Letho?
Did I say that?
Yeah, you wanted to know where Letho was. You couldn't believe he wasn't out yet.
You got to keep something. You got to keep something dangling. Dangling.
Oh God! As soon as you say that, right after we talk about Johnny.
Oh no!
Way to go!
Well played, good sir. Well played. One more piece of quick news that I just wanted to add. It's not in the show notes, but I just wanted to say, if you like the music of Gwent, Gwent has released a 4-track album on Spotify, and you can listen to the music of Gwent. It contains the title theme, the Scoia'tael theme, the Monsters theme, and the Skellige theme. It appears the Northern Realms theme is absent, but it's also possible that I maybe wasn't looking at the album properly, but it looks like it's just the 4 tracks. But yeah, man, it's good. Now you can play. Gwent music wherever you want to go.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is what's important for me is I have an obsession with the Monsters music. I think it's diabolical, and I love the way that I play my Northern Realms deck. I feel like I play my Northern Realms deck in a diabolical way, and to be able to play Northern Realms while listening to Monsters is awesome. So,
oh man, that's unbalanced. That's super overpowered. You can't have a monster mindset while playing Northern Realms. It's like you can't compete.
Believe me, it's not the music that's overpowered. And speaking of power, are we ready to start our strategy discussion on the 5 different plays?
The 5 plays of Gwent. Yes, I think we're ready to get into it right after this.
Maybe not today and not tomorrow, but someday someone will find a way to take you down.
The 5 plays of Gwent. So this is how we kind of outline this. We'll give you the quick primer before jumping into the main topic of today's strategy section, which is power plays. So the 5 plays, the way that I see it, and the way that I've convinced Gray Boxer to see it, is that there are power plays which are good when you need to commit to a round or force a pass or swing. Regardless of any other board state, just put power on the board. There are setup plays, which are good to improve current and future rounds, but really kind of build onto a more of a payoff later on. There are counter plays, which are good to limit your opponent's options and create value from your opponent's board. And there are stall plays, which are good to tax your opponent's resources and build card advantage. And then the final 5th play is passing, which is not always an easy decision, can often make or break, and involves considerations from the previous 4 plays to make the correct choice.
So right now you guys are enjoying the first part of a 5-part series. And our first, this week we're going to discuss power plays, and we've discovered that looking into the design of the decks and the design of the factions, that each faction does tend to make use of a different play style, and Northern Realms is a power deck. The faction is based on strength, promoting, it's based on adding a ton of strength to the board at one time, and we feel that Northern Realms is the showcase faction for our power plays discussion. We also think that Skellige is better for setup, and while there was kind of a large reduction in strength to the Shieldsmiths, Shieldsmiths are still there, they're still effective, and Skellige still requires a lot of setup. Monsters have the strongest counterplay. You know, the weather abilities are the easiest way to showcase a counterplay. And monsters do weather better than anybody else. And I don't even have to say that Skoyastal is Tell. I mean, Skoyatel is Stall. I mean, Skoyastal is Stall.
Stall. Yeah. Yeah. Everything you said, right on. Yeah. Also, monsters, I just wanted to say monsters have a lot of tech cards that are kind of exclusive to their faction as well. But power plays. So we're not going to talk exclusively about Northern Realms, but we'll be referencing a lot of Northern Realms stuff. So basically, what are power plays in Gwent? So these are really efficient plays in which you can provide your board with a massive increase in strength with one or maybe two cards, but it's really about being very, very efficient. So I think the most egregious example of it was when you could do some crazy medic chaining and just flood your board. The patch has corrected that to some degree, but it is still something that can get done through Reaver Scouts, medics, Nanaka, Shawnee, and it goes on and on.
Oh, Baron. Baron and replaying Baron and getting all of those little units out there.
Yeah, Baron can make it happen as well.
Weather immune medics.
Yeah, and Northern Realms tends to use Swallow Potions because it works so well with Promote. And my personal favorite is Yennefer when you have Roach. Yennefer comes out at 6, and then the Unicorn comes out at 1, and then Roach comes out at 3, and then everything gets buffed up by 2. So I have something wrong there because the total amount is 18. So.
Yeah, so maths are hard. One guy who makes you do a lot of math is my favorite card. That's a power card. And that's Bork.
Yeah, Bork's a huge one too.
I mean, he's dropping down at 11 strength in Northern Realms. Can't even Radovid him. And you're sitting there on the other side. And this happens to me when Bork is played against me as well. I'm sitting there sweating like, how can I avoid getting my units all burned to the ground? And so, so there's a lot of math involved with Yen and Roach, very strong power play, and of course Bork, I think is, he's my quintessential power play.
Yeah, and I think these plays with these golden cards that we're talking about, especially that they are neutral gold cards, it's important to note that Roach does interact with all of them, so while it's already a powerful play, it's made even better with Roach. My Radovid deck makes full use of that.
Yeah, and some of these power plays are going to depend on an opponent's board state. So some of the cards we'll talk about are going to require your opponent's, or at least yours anyway, to have a board state that will lend itself to the highest efficiency. And that's what we're talking about here, a single card that does a huge swing in power. Again, though, some of these really require no actual board state, which makes them good first turn plays in any given round. Or, in the case of one of our favorites from Skellige, make them a great third round play.
So power is really similar, I think, probably if you had to draw a parallel to other card games. It's very much an aggro style of play in that you are trying to get ahead of your opponent and put them in a position where they can't really come back easily. Gwent has the mechanic of 3 different rounds, so it doesn't matter how far ahead you get in a round, it only comes down to did you win the round or not, and the points aren't really important. But when you put your opponent in a losing position almost immediately by, again, I'll use the example of Yennefer into Roach with the Unicorn, they have now a mountain of strength to climb back from, and you've only played a single card. So that's the idea where you can get so far ahead and pass, and now you keep the card advantage because your cards were so much more efficient than your opponent's.
Yeah, so in your circumstance, Yen plus Roach, really the world's your oyster. You can, depending on where Roach lands, because Roach goes wherever she wants to, you can swallow Potion Roach and still not be subject to a Gigney, and then promote. So if you happen to hold that card combination, you can be very efficient with three rounds. You can prepare yourself for the next two rounds and confidently lose the first round while maintaining or at least keeping even on card advantage. Though I strongly disagree that anyone would be able to keep up with that particular combination with three cards of their own.
Right. So those are the main. I think a lot of the power plays are golden card related, but there are other things like Northern Realm specifically. You can make plays with Vess on the board, and she can call out, you know, one, two, or even three in some situations, Blue Stripes Commandos, on top of the fact that you've already used Yennefer. I guess the situation I would need to explain is if Vess is on the board and you've already promoted Roach, Yennefer causes all three Blue Stripes Commandos to come out fully buffed as well. So it can be, it's just the power potential. And then there's the regular kind of Northern Realm stuff that many of us are already used to, in that they have six ways of resurrecting units, and the resurrections do buffs, and the resurrections like Reaver Scouts can pull more units out, which can cause more resurrections, which can cause more units, which can cause Priscilla, which can draw another card and put it on the field. Like, it's really, it's, there are so many ways to build a power Northern Realms deck, which is cool because it makes the faction feel powerful. And it's uncool because it's kind of annoying to play against them sometimes. But I think they're at a level of power where I think it would be great if all the factions had the same sort of like element of fun, where I can put this and this, or maybe even this and this, and I have all these different choices in my suite of cards, but they all kind of work together into this powerful sort of synergistic way.
So what he's saying really is that Northern Realms dance parties are alive and well, and you've seen them, I've seen them, Beard's seen them, and these are the kind of power plays that require board states, or require like a deck state, or you need to have certain cards in your graveyard, or that kind of thing. And the reason why we focus on the gold cards is because gold cards are kind of obvious as far as, you know, you know, we mentioned my top card being Bork. An additional card that is really, really strong as far as a power play and swinging a board is Woodland Spirit, a.k.a. Leshen. Drops 7 gold strength, as well as many Foglets as you happen to have, which could be as little as 3 and as many as, I don't know. How many is the most that you've seen?
You can get, is it 7? I haven't seen a deck that has run more than 2 Necker Warriors.
Right.
Those are monster melee unit, 4 strength. Take a unit on the board, make 2 copies of it, and put it in your deck. So the next time you play Fog, 2 more Foglets come out, and then 2 more Foglets come out. So I've never seen 9 Foglets, but I've definitely seen 7 Foglets in a row.
So we'll say 7 Foglets. So between 3 and 7 Foglets are coming out at 2 strength. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then it spawns, it doesn't spawn the Foglets. It spawns Fog, okay? So the Fog is going to weather your opponent's row. And weather, while being a control play, can also be a power play if you're swinging your opponent's, if you're not playing it just to keep them down. If you're playing it against a buffed unit, for example, that is a power play when using Woodland Spirit, using Fog on a buffed ranged row of your opponent. So not only do you have a power swing just because of that, but you additionally spawn your own units and thin your deck with Foglets. So Woodland Spirit to me is one of the big poster children, poster spirits, Leshen, evil monster of power.
It is. It's a huge power card, and I think it's probably more about when you play it. Like, if you play Woodland Spirit turn 1, that's a power play. If you play it in a different turn where you actually know your Fog is not even just giving you your Foglets, but also bringing your opponent's board down in strength as well. Some of these kind of bleed into counterplay and bleed into setup in some cases as well, especially with our next example, Isengrim. So Isengrim is the power card to end all power cards. You play him last and in the right deck. That's usually good enough, but you still need to do a lot of setup to make him work. But I'm still classifying him as a power card because he lives to close out games very, very well. It doesn't always work, but I haven't had a lot of situations where it's basically, if it's the last card and you can't react to it, if you can react to it, it's a different story. You can Stamelford's Tremors, or you can... that's the main one.
Yeah, you're assuming that you've managed to get card advantage against Skoyastal.
Yeah, it's funny, yeah. I posted a screenshot today, though, of me doing it right before my Skoyastal opponent conceded because I had three cards on him. So it can happen. It can happen, but if they just have so many ways of doing it, right? But that's a different conversation. All you need to know is that Skoyastal can frequently have the last card, which is part of their setup and also part of their stall, and then their power play is Isengrim, and that's how they close the game out. It's like the other two rounds don't even matter. Yeah.
But Isengrim really is the power card at the end of all of that. He's what's there to swing the power in your direction and to force a forfeit, for example. Right. So another great example, I think, is Madman Lugos. Madman Lugos is the captain of your ship, all right? He's going to drop down onto the board at, what, minimum 14, maybe over 20 gold strength. So you can drop him down there, and he's going to give you more gold value than just about anybody would playing them on a blank board.
Yeah, and it's not even about... I think that you could make an argument that he would be more of a setup card, but you're going to have things in your graveyard. It's just going to happen. So Madman's going to be good. How good he would be is I guess, variable, but he'll be good when you play him. And yeah, Dimeridium Bomb does counter him, but I think we're not talking so much about the counters here. Obviously, Isengrim is countered by Stamelford. It doesn't make him not a power card or a powerful card. So Madman Lugos is definitely the Skellige power card. There's a deck out there I saw last night piloted by Atomic Pepper that actually... It operators out. It operators Queen's Guards, so you end up with like five or six Queen's Guards through decoying and rezzing operator and just keeping copying your Queen's Guards. Where Ceres can actually come down in the mid to high twenties, because played so many Queen's Guards. So it kind of turns her into a power play, but that's mostly set up. I just wanted to highlight that Atomic Pepper showed me an awesome deck last night, which I lost to, but I think halfway through the game, I just wanted to see how big Ceres would get. So I helped him kill his I helped him kill his Queen's Guards a couple extra times after I was pretty sure I was out of the game.
Anyway, oh, that's hilarious! Really that's such a good play. That sounds like Dio, right? Ronnie James Dio in our Discord, the monster guy who does all the operating. Yeah, he does all the operating procedures.
All the operating. Yeah, Dio PhD. D-O-M-D,
yeah, more like Doogie Howser MD. Yeah, but right. Anyway, well, we got some honorable mentions for the power cards here. One of these cards, and you might disagree. We're going to talk about a silver card named Sabrina Glevisig. Okay, and again, this is Northern Realms, pretty good with the power cards. What we're thinking of here is not that Sabrina is going to be, she's not a control card. She could remove strength, right? She drops onto your opponent's board as a disloyal unit at 3 strength, and when you kill her, she blows up the entire board, right? Mm-hmm. For 4 strength apiece. Mm-hmm. So it does require a board state, and that's what we talked about earlier. Some of these do, but you can get insane value out of a single silver card, and if you were thinking of running a Lacerate anyway, dropping her on there first, jeez, I mean, you can remove so much strength with a single card, and while that strength is removal strength, it is still power because it swings everything back in your favor.
Yeah. Yeah, she kind of walks the line on setup, but I think, yeah, she definitely offers you a huge swing in power. And I actually think she maybe walks the line on counterplay because it makes use of your opponent's board to really generate the value. But I see what you mean. It's like you can get a huge swing out of it, and I hear you. Another thing I'd like to talk about, not really an honorable mention, this is maybe just one more that we should probably cover, since you all have this card, good old-fashioned Geralt, the Swordmaster. He's a 12-strength gold card. Forget about it. That's all you need to know. You play him 12-strength, usually on an empty board, That's good enough to count for one. Your opponent would have to play a card of equal or greater value, which there are not many, although we are talking about a lot of those cards, but there are not many in response to Geralt that would really get you ahead. So Geralt is kind of the OG power card that we all know and love.
Yeah, well, you know what? Someone came into my stream the other night, an awesome viewer. We had someone requesting goofy covers of Evanescence songs. And when you said Geralt, for some reason I heard Geralt in Goofy's voice, and I was like, Geralt?
It was Jimmy Josh, I think, wasn't it?
Was it Jimmy Josh? Well, shout out to him.
So what? It was like 1:30 in the morning, and I'm watching your stream, as I do. I'll watch your stream. I try to watch your stream as much as I can while I'm playing my own little bit of Gwent off stream for myself.
Yeah.
I had to mute your stream because it wasn't because the song was so annoying. It's because it was making me laugh, and I didn't want to wake anybody up at that time of night. But I think we're getting off topic, I think.
What?
We may not be. Maybe that is the power play. Maybe Jimmy Josh wanted you to fail.
Yeah, because, Goofy's the power play here.
Yeah. One more. There's a couple more honorable mentions that we wanted to cover for, like, power cards. You could say that the Caretaker... Actually, you could safely say that Caretaker is a power play. And I guess in some ways, Shawnee as well. Gold cards that resurrect usually are pretty strong, especially if you can resurrect a medic and you're a class like Monsters that doesn't have a medic, so you're getting the Caretaker and the medic and whatever you medic back. So that's definitely one of them, and that's a card that I've got my eyes on. Once I craft Last Wish, maybe I craft a Caretaker.
Oh, yuck.
Yeah.
It's definitely what you want, man. Caretaker. I love having Caretaker. I had Caretaker... I demoted my Shawnee when I was playing the decks we're going to talk about here in a minute. And this guy was playing this Monsters deck that Caretakered my Roach and Caretakered my my demoted Shawnee. And it was just unbelievable power. I just was like, this guy just pulled so much gold strength out of nowhere. I'm in trouble.
How did he get your Roach as well? Or did he Griffin your Roach earlier?
He Griffined it, you know. Because of course he did.
Well, you got to promote Roach right away, man, so that doesn't happen. That's the trick, man. That's the trick. That Caretaker card, that's a good card. So that's a roundup of the cards that we feel are the most powerful. If you feel like we've missed anything, or we maybe missed your favorite card that you use to just kind of bomb the board with strength, let us know. Email us at commandershornpodcast@gmail.com or tweet at us at commandershorn. So moving on. So we built decks to kind of... play around this theme of power. We both chose Northern Realms deck, so I'm sure that we have a lot of stuff to talk about kind of in between ours. I'll go first. So my deck was Power Radovid, and I just called it McBeard's Power Radovid. So it should be easy to find on GwentDB, but we will provide a link in the show notes as well. And the idea with Power Radovid is there's a couple things you can do. The first thing is the game opener is all about a power card. So if you're going first, a good play would be to play Yennefer with Unicorn, which has Roach coming out, and then buffs Roach, buffs Yen, and then you can immediately follow up with a promote, or you can use a blue stripe scout to promote Roach, to buff Roach, and then promote Roach. So I could probably go over what's in the deck as well before I start talking about it in too great detail. But Yennefer is one of the gold cards. Also, Geralt, Igni, Ciri, and Bork 3 Jackdaws. Bork 3 Jackdaws is another card that I would use to open up because it also brings Roach out, and it puts your opponent in a really tricky situation if they want to stay on the round. And I've had a lot of round one passes. I've had a couple of people try to navigate it as well. But when you're playing other cards like Prince Stennis, Ciri, if it's the proper round, of course, or just playing some special cards, decoy, or just sacrificing your blue stripe scout to the mighty Bork, just so you can get that promote on Roach at a buffed state. It's all very much worth it, but it also really warps the board state, makes it really hard for your opponent to stay in round one. And then round two, you can kind of just have your way. You just use Prince Stennis, Toller to get a better card in your hand, perhaps. And eventually you can just close out with any gold card, bringing back your promoted Roach, making making basically the strength that your opponent's trying to go for that much less, and then you can continue to overpower them with your Blue Stripes Commandos, Vess in some situations, Field Medics bringing everything back. Field Hunters rolling on the right turn also can put you ahead very easily, and you can control things with Lacerate, protect yourself with Clear Skies, and you do run two promotes in this deck. And finally, you run Scorch. So, yes, you heard it correctly. Geralt Igni plus Scorch plus Bork equals complete and total freedom of what you want to remove on the board. And I actually do prefer to run it this way. Some people think that it's a little overkill. You could probably replace Scorch with something like Dimeridium Bomb and replace Clear Weather with some other thing. But the way I play that deck, it's been working very well for me. It seems very strong, and it always opens with a ton of power.
Yeah, I think that's a great deck, and that sounds really fun. If you guys want to build that, check it out on GwentDB. I'd like to build it just to see if what it's like to have all those Scorches going on. I don't run Scorch in my deck. Spoiler alert. I don't use it because I try to recycle cards. So my deck is just called Gray Boxer's Power Hensel deck on GwentDB.com. I run some similar gold cards. Okay, so I run Ciri and I run Gigny because of course you do. And Ciri has particular value because she's strong in any Bork round, especially if you end up losing that round. You get her back, you get the card advantage. There's a couple of fun ways to play around her. Additionally, I run Bork, and I've been looking forward to this. I've been working on rolling my R's, perfecting the pronunciation as only a Commander's Horn podcast can. And I've built my Northern Realms power deck focusing on Bork. So Bork is the third one, and he's the most important card in this deck. Third gold card in my deck. The fourth gold card is Shani. Shani will come up later. I know you were, I was like, why would you play Shani when you can play Baron? It's better medics. I'll tell you why. So I run Kedwenny Sergeants in my deck. I run Blue Stripe Scouts for buffing. I run a bunch of Swallow Potions. I run a promote, and with Henselt as my leader, I can promote at will. So my opening play is Bork. He brings out Roach, okay? And then then you just see the wheels start turning on the other side. People are trying to calculate, how do I beat this? Do I play around it? Do I give up? They play something. So we play Swallow Potion on Roach. If they've removed Roach, it's fine. We just continue playing around our own Bork. But generally, if they don't remove Roach right away, we use Swallow Potion, and then we promote with either the promote in our hand or with Henselt. Okay, we need to make sure that we have a promote in our hand. Then, after Bork goes off, because after that, Bork does go off. You've basically spent your entire first three turns to set up and burn everything down. Then you play Kedwenny Sergeant, and you demote Bork. And now you're starting to see why we have Shani. Mm. So, in round two is amazing. Because if you draw Ciri, or if you had Ciri, you've got an incredible combo for this round. So, your first thing that you're going to do is you're going to Shani Bork. And you know what Shani does. Shani is a gold medic that resurrects something and turns it back into gold. So now we have a gold Bork counting down again. And now you see the wheel starting to turn. Oh god, I have to win this round. He played Bork again, and it's promoted again. Okay? That brings out Roach. So now we've got the Holy Trinity. We've got Ciri in a round that we're going to lose. So we'll get her back for card advantage. We've got Bork, who's come back from the dead. And we've got Roach at 11 strength. Or 13. So we're in a great position here. This is when you start playing your spies. You play your spies into the Bork. You can kind of just sort of mess around a little bit. And then if you happen to have another Kedwenny Sergeant, you can go ahead and demote Bork again. And then in round three, you bring Bork up with a medic, or you bring Bork up with, you know, really anything else, right? You can, any medic, Naneke will work, and then you use Henselt to promote him for the third time. And this is so much, I can't even tell you how much fun this is, to have Bork in every single round. Like, you do need a good opening hand with a good mulligan, but oh my gosh, there's so much power on the board. You've got 30 gold power on the board per round. We're running Gigny. If you don't get Bork, that's fine. Play Gigny, demote Geralt and then play him again in round two or round three whenever it's perfect. Like, this strategy works with either one of those two cards. Bork is just the most fun because he's just so dominant.
Yeah.
Obviously, if he gets demoted, you just promote him again.
And when we say Gigny, we're talking about Geralt Igny.
Oh, baby.
I know that has formed over our streams, but in case you're listening for the first time, we are referring to the card Geralt Igny. If you like how these decks sound in our very top line explanation of how these decks function very well and kind of the power plays that can help you win, definitely check out the description in the podcast or the show notes. We will be linking both decks there. You can see the full decks and our full write-ups as well. Descriptions on how you navigate it if you win round one, lose round one, have a really tight round three, mulligan strategy as well. But yeah, generally, you can create a pretty favorable hand of 10 cards with proper mulliganing. And in my case, holding on to Taller. You use Taller as well?
No, we did drop Taller.
Oh, you dropped Taller? Yeah.
Yeah,
Taller, so I feel like, is essential for me because sometimes I just really need that promote that's not showing up, and you'll get it. And Stennis might get it for you as well. But you do get it. It does show up.
Yeah, so we did end up dropping Taller. I was running Taller for a little while, but he ends up getting Bort and because he's 6 strength. So we actually dropped him for Naneka for that third Bork.
Naneka. All right. So yeah, like I said, check the decks out in the show notes. We're very proud of the guides and we hope you enjoy it. We hope you enjoyed the discussion on power and how, Northern Realms, if you're not bringing the big power, you might be doing it wrong. Cause this is kind of their territory and you know, the perk, everything with the faction from the perk to the ability to flood the board to the promotes. All lend well to building high strength against your opponent and putting them in a position that they have a hill to climb. So Northern Realms is fun for this reason, maybe a little too fun. We'll see as the patches come and go where Northern Realms stands. But right now, it feels pretty good. I think it feels pretty good to play, that is. Like, it's fun to play. Balance-wise, I don't know if I can be as objective.
We have a ton of fun with these decks, and so it's kind of my go-to deck this week. So if you end up running into me on the casual ladder, unfortunately, I've just given away my entire strategy. So good luck to me.
Well, that's what you do when you stream and you write guides and you show everybody your deck, and then you go into tournaments and people say, "Well, we know exactly what this guy does." That's that content creator life. I think you got to always keep innovating. You got to come up with some next stuff.
All right, and with that, I think we're about ready to move into our community feedback section. Oh, we've got the tweet of the week and the email of the week coming right up.
All right, lead us off, Josh, with the tweet of the week.
This one comes in from IndieNits. When does a card go from really good to unbalanced and unfair? That's a great question, IndieNits. Thank you for the tweet. If you want your questions read on the show, please follow the show on Twitter, at Commander's Horn, and share your thoughts with us. For me, this question is where the line is drawn between a card that is excellent and balanced, so a card that's really good, and a card that becomes an instant win, which is really bad, unbalanced, and unfair. I think the best way to explain this is with examples. An excellent card that is balanced and strong, that isn't too strong, is one of my personal favorite cards, the Bloody Baron. This is a Northern Realms card that plays at 8 strength thanks to the buff. It's a 6 strength gold unit that plays either a 1 strength medic or a 4 strength botchling, which is a resilient 4 strength unit. So I feel like this card is just strong enough to be the best without being unbalanced and unfair. You get a lot of choice with this card, but neither one of the choices are very overpowered. You can think of it maybe as like a 6 strength medic, okay, or an 8 strength medic, I guess, with the perk, plus the 1 strength from the unit. So 9 strength medic that doesn't promote. So it's like Shawnee. Imagine if Shawnee had, you know, a similar quality. That's what Bloody Baron can be. Bloody Baron can also help you set up for the next two rounds, or next round, whatever you need, by putting the Botching on the board. But the Botching's removable. It's only a 4-strength unit. It is resilient, but again, removable. I think that the Bloody Baron's in a really good place, whereas some cards are maybe towing the line even more. Do you have any ideas on what like an unfair or unbalanced card might be, McBeard?
Yeah, I do actually. I think a really good example of a card that may be unbalanced is the Bloody Baron. It's a 9-strength medic. It's a 9-strength medic that has the flexibility of also placing a botchling on your board that you can promote. And it's crazy how much flexibility and strength that this card offers. So you can clearly see that there's a very, very thin line on what one of us might think is totally fine and what one of us thinks is slightly unfair. That it was kind of a joke. I kind of joked when I added that in just now, but I do believe,
yeah,
I do believe that that one is so close to the edge of what is fair for what he can do. That I find it curious that that was your example.
So you're saying that, you know, the line is so thin, it's almost a moral decision, right? Where on one side you have a kind little baby, and on the other side you have a horrible, unfair, unbalanced monster.
Well, they're both strong. And the fact that he's 8, it's, when you're talking about gold value, I mean, it's really not unbalanced, I suppose. It's just the fact that the Lubberkin can also resurrect a silver unit, such as Nanaka, which can also resurrect a bronze unit, which would be Field Medic, which can resurrect something else. It's like the medic chains that they're trying to stop. You can't stop the chain train.
I don't know if you caught the reference in there, but it is very close, and it's almost like a close decision like you have to make in The Witcher 3 about the Bloody Baron, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which one of these things do you want to deal with? They're both going to give you a hard time.
Mm-hmm.
Both going to give you a hard time. So as far as like unbalanced cards. I think the devs have their laser pointers set on. I don't know if I can isolate this to a single card, but I know that the promoting roach thing that we just talked about as a very strong tactic in our decks, Golden Roach was like the similarity between two of our decks for sure. But Golden Roach is kind of nuts when you can place.
He's the unstoppable horse.
It's just the thing is, as you set up to build Golden Roach, you're also building a really big board because you've probably played a gold card that's quite good, got Roach, promote Roach. You're probably in a good spot to win the round one. You've maybe built your deck to do that. Round two, you play Ciri and Roach comes back, and Roach can be 7 or 9 or 11 in some cases. And that's just in one card, and that's just a throwaway card. That's the throwaway card that you get back in round three and you can do it all again. So it seems strong. I play with it right now, and it, and I'm winning a lot of games with it. It's just very hard for your opponent to come back from. I also think that what else is bothering me right now? I think maybe Isengrim.
Yeah, is it?
But it's not really Isengrim the card. It's the nature of him always frequently being able to be the last card.
Yeah, so it might be something to do with the Skoya stall. Like, is there a unit in there that we can target that is too powerful, maybe, that creates this kind of situation where you're always behind facing Skoyatel?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think...
Glace? Is it... It's not Decoy, is it? I mean, Decoy's gotta stay. There's nothing we can do about Decoy.
Careful what you say.
Well, and here's the thing. Here's my idea about Decoy, right? Because Decoy can be abused by Skoyatel because it's a special card, okay? What if Decoy instead played like it did in Witcher 3 Gwent, in old Gwent, where it just stayed on the board and was sort of a 0-strength unit?
Wouldn't that be better than it is now?
It would be. It wouldn't count as a special card for Iglaze or Nature's Gift.
Oh, so it would just be a unit you play...
Yeah,
like at 1,
or 0, or whatever have you. I just think that if they change it to a unit instead of a special card, I think that would eliminate the ability of Skoistal to abuse Decoy.
Oh, well, maybe. I can't imagine they haven't tried something like that, just kind of considering how it was in Wild Hunt. And while we are talking about strong, strong cards and strongs that may be overpowered, I think the heart of the question here is, when does a card go from being really good? Like, how does it, where does it cross that line? How can you make a card that's good that's not too strong? So we saw, like, I think a clear example of a card that was too strong, it doesn't matter if you agree, the devs agree, that Philippa was too strong. Philippa was, at one point, a 6-strength, disloyal or loyal, wherever you want, unit that when played on the row, reduced all strength to 1 for every unit on the row, gold cards included. So you would say that that card was unbalanced and unfair. So they need to rein it back a little bit. So what are they going to do? Okay, well, make it so it can only be played disloyally. Okay, that makes it a little worse. Now let's also make it so it can't target gold cards. I'm like, okay, now it's about probably like feeling a bit better now, feeling not super oppressive. It's like, and now let's double the strength to 12. And now it feels, now it's not a good card. Now it's not a good card anymore. So it's as if they crossed that threshold of, in a backwards way, when does a card go from overpowered to good? And I think that the balancing change, you want a card to stay playable. You just don't want it to be the best card in the game or an auto-include in every single deck. You always want that variety there. So Philippa's situation kind of didn't make her less desirable in that you might still run her in a specific deck. I think it just kind of made her very hard to use and not really anywhere near as good as she was. You have to have a very specific board state that you need to clobber with Philippa.
This sort of comes back to what we were talking about with the Baron, where these balance questions are really hard, and that line is hard to find, where we know that the Baron is incredibly powerful, and my favorite for him as an excellent balanced card is because he's so close to the line that he could be overpowered. And then, of course, Beard comes out and says, well, actually, I picked him for the overpowered card. So the thing is the devs can do whatever they want. It's closed beta. So really, we're the ones testing this out and trying to find out what cards do this. So instead of picking Philippa up and pushing her back towards the line of about where Bloody Baron is by only making her disloyal or increasing the strength a little bit, they chucked her up in the air and grand slammed her over the line that she's so far away from being overpowered anymore that she's just sort of a weak gold card now. And I think it's the job of us testing in this closed beta to find out what those cards are and find out, you know, how close are they willing to let certain cards get to the line. And yeah. I think that Philip was a great example of when you have an unbalanced card, what we're going to see happen to it in the closed beta.
Yeah. Yeah, she truly is the Cambi of Northern Realms. I think I could say that safely. So let's go to the email, and we'll wrap things up here. Our email comes from our friend Dragon Reborn. I had a question I'm not sure is high-ranking in importance, but as a longtime Hearthstone player, I have competed in tournaments via Battlefy, Challenge, etc., and I'm hearing about these Beta Brawl tournaments, and I really want to get in, but they are all for PC, and I'm playing on Xbox. We've got cross-platform play, but as far as I know, we can't send invites to games. Do you think there will be a way for console players to compete in future competitions? So my answer is, I can't imagine they're not working on that functionality. That's a gut reaction. I think that ideally all versions work in the same way. I know that there are a number of differences in Xbox, but I think that personally, the issue may be with the Sony PlayStation model, as they have had a history of not playing well with cross-platform. To use an example, their Diablo version did not talk to the rest of your Battle.net account, and it was hacked to pieces on that platform because they wanted their own servers.
That's bad. So, bad.com.
Yeah, it was bad, and it made something that could have been really great into something not so great. So I think Xbox is in a fine position to get all the features they need to get. And I'm a PlayStation user too. I'm not saying that because I don't like PlayStation. I just have seen it firsthand that they take these games and they silo them and it becomes something else. So don't worry about Xbox, personally. I think you're going to be fine.
Yeah, and you know what? While the PC users do have the ability to challenge each other, It's just remember that we do have to do it through the GOG system, which is imperfect, we'll say. I would say almost
also
half the time
beta.
During a... Yeah, also in beta. So we're beta testing a beta game with matchmaking via... custom matchmaking via a beta system as well. So beta on beta is, you know, you multiply that out and it takes about twice as long to do matching as it should.
That's some expert analysis with credentials and data to back it up.
Yeah, I've got all the data.
Plus beta equals... All right. And there are some fans, some audience members, some friends of ours on Xbox that we would
commandos.
Love to play some matches. Yeah, some commandos that play on Xbox. We'd definitely like to get some matches together. I was fortunate enough to run into one of those people, and it was the only time I would ever have taken on this person, Mythic Pilot.
Yeah.
And because we can't challenge each other, but I did run into him on the ladder. I was playing my experimental Gels deck, and I got hung out to dry. And it felt bad because it would have been nice if I was playing a competitive deck. We could have had a real game. One day, Mythic Pilot. One day.
Oh, man.
And Stretchy, too. One day, Stretchy.
Yeah,
anyway.
So if any of you have any questions or any features you'd like to see on the show, any guests you'd like to reach out to, contact us on Twitter at Commander's Horn. Hit us up via email. We are commandershornpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for the tweet of the week, IndieNit, and thanks for the email of the week, Dragon Reborn.
Absolutely. So that wraps it up for Commander's Horn 13, the most unlucky Commander's Horn episode, if you're that kind of person. We just had to get past episode 13, and now we're good. So, before we go, Gray Boxer, why don't you let everybody know where you can be found out there playing Gwent?
You can find me on Twitch streaming a Dwarven deck as a dwarf. I am at twitch.tv/GrayBoxer. I'm also pretty active on Twitter at GrayBoxerGwent.
And I can be found on Twitch streaming most weekdays and some weekends at McBearded. And also you can reach out to me on Twitter at McBeardCH, CH for Commander's Horn. Still working on getting some YouTube content up. I think I say that every single episode, but it really is in my priorities, but I won't be plugging it until I have something there that I'm proud to show.
Yeah, you'll have it soon, trademark.
Soon, TM. But that'll do it for us. Thanks so much for joining. Thanks so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed this. We hope you enjoyed this strategy section and the strategy sections to come as we talk about the other main styles of play for Gwent. So this is Dane.
And this is Josh. Best of luck
on the path.